DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be joined by Dr. Terrence Wright, who is an associate professor of philosophy and the director of the pre-theology program at St. John Vianney Theological Seminary in Denver, Colorado. His academic interests include phenomenology and personalism, particularly the work of Edith Stein, Emmanuel Mornay. He has also published on the relationship between philosophy and literature. With Terrence Wright, we go inside the pages of Dorothy Day, An Introduction to Her Life and Thought, published by Ignatius Press. Terrence, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here.
What an outstanding book, Dorothy Day, An Introduction to Her Life and Thought. I loved every page. You were so wonderful in covering all of the aspects of her life.
Good.
What compelled you to write it? Because a lot of us love the saints, but it's another thing to invest so much in your life in trying to bring forward their lives and thoughts.
Two things, I think, really. One is, I do think Dorothy Day is one of those people who people sometimes hear the name but don't really know much about them, and that there really wasn't, I thought, a good sort of introductory book out there. There are a lot of very good books on Dorothy Day out there, but one that you could just sort of pick up and go to as a way of getting into reading her and studying her. I didn't think that book was there. The other thing that drove it is that I thought that she's sort of misunderstood. She's often thought to be, for lack of a better term, a dissenting Catholic. And that, I think that some people on either side of the debates kind of identify her as that. But if you really take the time to read her and see what she wrote and did, you really see, I think, that she's a very faithful daughter of the church. And I was trying to clear up that sort of misconception about her.
Yeah, one of the reasons for the misconception, I think, in some ways, is that there are those out there who feel that she is, I hate to say it this way, Terrence, but she's not worthy to be a saint.
Yeah, there are some people who say that, yes.
And I think that is such a misnomer. You have to go back and you have to look at the fruitfulness, not only of the work that we're very familiar with, the public work, but how God really began planting seeds so long ago. Those first chapters in which you go back and you look at that childhood, and then you look at those little influences, even the role of Mrs. Barrett.
Right.
That makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you really see that she was always drawn to God, even at the times in her life when she tried to push him away, I think most deliberately. It just never, she couldn't really get away from him. And so it's always present in her life, and it really does inform so much of her life that that it is, you know, it's a fascinating story. And I think, you know, there's no doubt that she did things, in particularly when in her early 20s, which were very startling in some sense for a woman at that time period and so on. And, you know, and so she did have some very difficult times. And, you know, I mean, she had an abortion when she was 21. She had a failed marriage by the time she was 23 or 24. So there are events in her life that people might want to point to and say, well, how can we say that woman's a saint? But, you know, there's a lot of saints you can sort of tell similar stories. You know, St. Augustine comes to mind. And, what you can't miss is how that call that God was making to her never goes away, and that she finally answers it. And it's really a beautiful story.
It really is. You know, as you were relating some of those, as she would say, the horror of her life, the great horror of that abortion and her marriage that failed. You know, I mentioned the example of Mrs. Barrett. That was a childhood friend's mother. Her piety captured Dorothy's heart. And it's like those types of seeds that are planted, it takes those horrific moments sometimes to break the soil so that they can grow. I mean, and that's, I think, what you bring out so well in the book.
Yeah, I think, I mean, and I think there's often in her life, there are those moments that she's not even really sure what it is that's drawing her or attracting her, but there is something there that she knows that there's something more that's there. And so just in those small acts of piety that she sees in other people, or sometimes she would just go to see the beauty of the Catholic liturgies. But there was something about that that was always kind of speaking to her.
Isn't that something? I mean, that entrance into the church that day where she experienced benediction.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it was the example, what was happening, not only the unseen grace that flows from those kind of encounters, but also the witness of those around her. That really appealed to her, didn't it?
It did, yeah. I mean, she talks about when she moved to New Orleans for a period of just going to benediction and not really knowing what was going on, but kind of just having that sense that something important was happening, you know, and then a friend of hers gave her a rosary, which again, she really didn't know how to pray, but she knew there was something important about this. And so you get those moments in her life that, you know, really, like I said, I mean, she, God was clearly calling her even at the times when she was maybe not wanting to hear that call, but it's always present.
Isn't that, Terrence, the way of conversion? I mean, it's sloppy in most lives, aren't they? I mean, it's just sloppy.
Right. Right. Yeah, this is, and it's kind of a slow process for her. I mean, I think the birth of her daughter after she was, out of wedlock, but that, you know, she really thought that she wasn't going to be able to have children after the abortion. And she really took her pregnancy with her daughter and then the birth of her daughter is really a sign of God's mercy. And that is really the kind of the event that eventually brings her into the church. But again, it was a slow process. And like you said, sloppy. I mean, it wasn't this like one moment. It was something that was going on throughout her life.
How remarkable, too. I didn't realize until I read your book that her confirmation name, when she came into the church, she chose Maria Teresa. Teresa, mm-hmm. For Teresa of Avila. I knew Therese,
right,
was an important figure for her because she would ultimately write a biography about Therese. But
right.
Teresa of Avila, what do you suppose that influence was?
She was attracted, I think, just because she was another kind of powerful, strong woman. I mean, you know, Dave was a... You know, she started as she was a journalist. I mean, she was kind of a groundbreaker in some ways in that sense. And so, I mean, she was attracted to that model of a strong woman, and I think of a saintly woman. And I think she thought there was a certain joy. And I think joy is the best word for it, that she thinks that she found in Teresa of Avila, and a certain appreciation of the sort of beauty of life. And that was, I think, the attraction there.
As you know, Teresa of Avila, I mean, she writes in her life about the things that tempted her. And she was very aware of, you know, that, I don't know how else to say it, but that darker side of herself,
mm-hmm.
that kept coming up and biting her. And I think when you read Dorothy Day's story, especially in those earlier years, in her early 20s, mid-20s, do you think she could identify with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a part of it also. And I mean, I think what's kind of interesting is, particularly with the relationship with the man who was the father of her daughter, Foster Batterham. I mean, that was when you read about her description of her life with him, it's clear she loves him very much and he loves her very much. And it was very hard for her to end that relationship when he refused to marry her. She knew that as a Catholic, she could not continue on in this relationship with him. And that was not an easy decision, but it was a very clear decision to her. And I think, you know, there was a sense in which she knew she had to sort of separate herself from him physically. She moved, she spent some time in Florida, she moved to California, but just because there was such a temptation there, because that love was so strong, but she was not going to continue that relationship outside of marriage. And so, you know, she had those temptations. I mean, she's it's not that she didn't understand those relationships,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
she appreciated the beauty of them, but also the sense in which that relationship couldn't continue.
Let's talk about a hero of the new evangelization, and I'm talking about a nun. No one probably knows who she is. Here's Dorothy Day at this moment. She wants to have her child baptized. She doesn't right. know how to go about doing it. And she encounters this woman who just accepts her where she's at and helps her.
Yeah, that's a kind of a beautiful moment that this, you know, she just sees this nun walking along the beach and comes up and says, I want to have my child baptized. And this, and yeah, the nun is sort of like, of course you do. You know, like she's not at all surprised. Of course you want to have your child baptized. And just takes Dorothy and her daughter under her wing and just works her through the process. And it's really is a, just a sort of beautiful story and gets Dorothy to see that she can't raise her daughter Catholic unless she herself is Catholic, and realizes, you know, this is not going to be easy, but that we'll get through this together. And she really is just a, you know, just a, such a grace at that moment in her life. That's the person that she encounters.
No judgment. No judgment.
No. No. And that is, because it's funny, there's a story that Dorothy Day tells of that when she went and was baptized, she said to somebody, said to someone asked her about staying around for something. And she says, oh, I got to get back to my daughter. And this woman said, oh, I didn't know you were married. And she said, I'm not. And the woman's face just dropped because she was like, who did we just baptize? This woman who's married, who's not married and has a child. So there was that sort of judgmental experience, but that nun, the nun just did not do that. That was not that she knew what Dorothy needed and gave her what she needed at that moment.
The nun is Sister Aloysius. The thing about her is, again, we talk about the new evangelization. It was because of her willingness to journey with her and just accept her where she's at and continue to point her in that conversion. And that's the model for how we are to encounter others, because you just never know. Did she know? Did this nun live long enough? I'm guessing we don't know, to see the fruits of that life that she encountered that day on the beach.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yes, yeah, I mean, you're right, because I mean, it's just the whole notion of the accompaniment, that we are called to accompany people where they are. And to try to lead them as best we can towards Christ. And, you know, and I think that she's just a wonderful example of that. I mean, she was Sister Aloysius. She was a retired Sister of Charity. So I don't know how much longer she lived or how she and Dorothy maintained the relationship. She never talks about that. She just kind of appears at that moment. It's a beautiful part of the story.
I see her as that figure from The Trouble with Angels, Rosalind Russell, that type of nun, you know?
Right. Yes. Yeah. And, you know, if we think of our own lives, there's always, sometimes those people do just kind of show up at the right moment at the right time. And, you know, we don't always recognize them at first.
Even after she comes into the church and she's trying to make a living for her daughter, she ends up in Hollywood.
I know.
Oh, my gosh. Well, good luck.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she's so – I mean, that's one of the things I love about her, is there's something so just – you know, so caught up in the times and so, in lack of a better term, so American about her. You know, she mm-hmm. just lives all over the country. But yes, so she travels for a while with her daughter. You know, there she is, single mother, goes out to work as a screenwriter for a time. And then the Great Depression hits and the studio goes under and she loses that job. But yeah, that's just kind of, I mean, just the kind of, and again, she's kind of, it's just an interesting model of a woman who is really very independent and very powerful in a sense, you know, at a time when that was less typical.
Yeah, she really was affected by Matthew chapter 25.
Yes.
You talk about taking root in someone's heart.
That, along with maybe the Sermon on the Mount, are probably maybe the two key mm-hmm. scripture passages to understanding Dorothy Day. You know, the idea that you know, when you saw me hungry and naked, you know, it wasn't that the poor in that situation really are Christ. It's not mm-hmm. just a metaphor. It's not just a symbol, but to really recognize Christ in the other is what shapes, I think, the rest of her life.
Oh, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you to talk about her relationship with Peter Maurin. That's a key relationship.
It is. You know, Peter Maurin, who serves as seen as the co-founder of the Catholic Worker Movement, he was about 20 years older than Dorothy Day. And we don't really know all that much about Peter Maurin. He never wrote his biography or his autobiography or anything like that. But he was, I think the story of their first meeting is so interesting. She had traveled to, she'd been given an assignment to cover hunger march in Washington, D.C. in December of 1932. And she was really drawn to what she saw as the nobility of these protesters because of their suffering and their hunger, but they were still there trying to get their voices heard. And she really wanted to figure out a way to sort of combine her Catholicism and her talent as a writer and her own sensibilities to serve the poor and to figure out how to do that, which she hadn't really been able to find a way to do that. So she went to the Shrine of the Immaculate Conception on the campus of Catholic University, and it was on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, and she goes and she prays to the Blessed Mother for some way to be able to bring together all these different parts of her life. And the next day when she returns to New York, Peter Maurin is sitting in her kitchen talking with her sister-in-law. And that's the person who she's going to found the Catholic Worker with, and that which will become the story of the rest of her life. And so he has a sort of vision, Peter Maurin has a sort of vision of what he wants to achieve. Real quickly, they're having basically three points. One is houses of hospitality, where the poor and the homeless can be served, a newspaper where Catholic social teachings and Catholic understandings of social problems can be explored and explained. And then he also saw the desire to open up farms where people could work, and so nobody's unemployed on a farm, as he would say. They would work, they would raise food, both for themselves and for the houses of hospitality. So he had this kind of vision. But it was really Dorothy Day that kind of had the force to kind of really bring that into reality, that the two really complemented each other so well in that way. And so she saw particularly the newspaper as really appealing to her abilities and her talents as a writer, but also seeing them, as a way of practicing the spiritual works of mercy. You know, this is how you're going to instruct the ignorant, comfort, admonish the sinner, comfort the sorrowful. I mean, that this was going to be a tool for that. So, in a sense, the houses of hospitality were more about the corporal works of mercy, feeding the hungry and clothing the naked. But the newspaper, I think, was really for her the tool of the spiritual works of mercy.
And when you mentioned, when you were talking about how to get this done, I mean, I kept thinking of the word chutzpah. I mean,
right.
but that's grace-filled. I mean, in a grace-filled chutzpah, because she was, again, her Catholic faith, and especially the life of faith in her, was so nurtured by the sacraments, yes, but it was also the discipline of what she would experience, I have to say, as a Benedictine oblate. In a very real way, because a lot of those attributes, everything, especially those houses of hospitality, that's so Benedictine, and prayer and work and all those things, that really was manifested in her in a very real way, don't you say? Think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think work and prayer really do, describe her life. I mean, that's what it becomes. And that she recognizes that, each need the other. She doesn't think she knows she couldn't accomplish what she had accomplished if it weren't for her prayer life and her sacraments and so on. But at the same time, the work informed the prayer life. I mean, it was very Benedictine in that sense. And it is a certain, you know, I mean, it's interesting, the notion of sort of chutzpah, or just the ability to get things done and not to be and to overcome obstacles. You know, she meets Peter Marin in December of 32, and the first edition of the paper comes out May 1st of 33. I mean, very clearly, very quickly, they saw what they were going to do. They had to find the resources to get that done, but she was very practical in the sense that she knew how to get things done.
This is a remarkable time, too, in this particular era of the 20th century, because we also have, she is a compatriot of sorts, Catherine de Hewitt Doherty, mm-hmm. Doing it in the same, not exactly the same thing, but darn close, fueled by that same devotion with the Madonna houses in her work, and where Dorothy wrote, Catherine de Hewitt Doherty spoke.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was a speaker, but it was coupled with both prayer and action.
Right, and they knew each other, so that's not surprising. Dorothy Day is a writer. I mean, I think that's one of the other engaging things about her is, you know, she wrote a lot of books, and for people who are interested, there's a lot of her writings there, plus all the contributions she made to the Catholic Worker and to other publications. And she's a good writer. You know, I think people can get into her and understand her. She's very clear, and she's a very good writer. And I think that's a great talent that she had.
We're talking with Terrence Wright about his book, Dorothy Day, an introduction to her life and thought. And I love the whole design of the book. I love the fact that, you know, we get such a wonderful cross-section of flavor of her life, but also of her devotional life, her mm-hmm. spiritual life. Truly, I do cherish those final chapters in which you talk about her years as she has gotten older and the experiences that she's had. Praise God for the life of her daughter, Tamar.
Yeah.
Making her a grandmother and a great-grandmother.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's Kate Hennessy, who is one of Dorothy Day's granddaughters, has written a lovely book called The World to Be Saved by Beauty that really looks very closely at the relationship between Dorothy Day and her daughter. And it was not always an easy relationship. I mean, there was definitely conflicts and some difficulties. You know, it's hard to be the daughter of a saint, mm-hmm. and you see that. So, I mean, it's a very human story, and it's not always easy. But again, particularly at the end of her life, I mean, Tamar was really there for Dorothy in those last years, and Dorothy took great comfort in that, and then that she was actually present when Dorothy passed away was I think a great blessing for her.
And how about that reemergence of the great love of her life, the father of her child?
They form a friendship there at the last years of their life as well, and actually they make sort of a couple where they just, you know, they'll sit and watch movies at night or something. Mm-hmm. I mean he was always in her life because he was the father of Tamar, and so he definitely had a role to play, and Dorothy never tried to cut that out of Tamar's life, or not recognize his role to play as Tamar's father. So I don't think there was ever that kind of conflict. I mean, he, and again, part of that was just out of the fact that she did love him. She thought that there was definitely qualities there that were lovable. And so they're able to kind of reconcile in those last years. And the last years of her life, while she's not as productive, they're very rich in her spiritual growth.
You know, this is the thing about her legacy, isn't it, Terrence? I think when we look back on the totality of her life, those early years, what may have seemed extraordinary, and maybe not as much as we thought, just because there isn't the broadcasting of our family histories. I mean, there's always mm-hmm. something going on in our histories, isn't there? That, you know, grandma doesn't talk about that, or, you know,
right,
we
right.
didn't hear about that. But today, her story is in a very real way a normative for many.
Mm-hmm.
She's so relatable. We need this life to look at and to embrace.
You sometimes see attached to her, you know, a saint for our age, but I do think that that's more than a cliche. I mean, I really think that that is true. Her story, you know, her profound experience of God's mercy is something that a lot of us, you know, need and have to know is out there. And so I think she's such a witness to that. You know, I think that she really is. I think her story just does resonate with contemporary experience.
Not only has Cardinal Dolan spoken of her as that great witness to mercy, but also Pope Francis has mentioned her.
Mm-hmm.
So when is this happening? I mean, when are we going to get this done? I mean, servant of God is beautiful, but let's get at least venerable going
yeah,
here.
Yeah, I know that. I mean, the process is still going on. There's a guild established, and they have a wonderful website for anybody who's interested, the Guild for Dorothy Day. There's a beautiful prayer there for her canonization, which if you are if you're interested, that's a good place to start to promote her cause. You know, they're still collecting the testimonies. They're still hopefully, you know, the possibility of a miracle is, you know, they're hoping for that. I mean, you know, I would love to see her canonized. You know, and I think it is the case that Pope Francis spoke glowingly of her when he was here in the United States. So I mean, we are hopeful that it might happen soon. But I don't know where they're at in the process.
Even more than that, I would suggest, and I'm sure maybe you would agree with me, Terrence, that if there are parents out there that are worried about their children, pray with Dorothy Day. Ask her to come mm-hmm. in there and to pray with you. And, or if you're someone who feels that, you know, I'm lost and that long loneliness, you feel mm-hmm. lonely, at Dorothy Day is the one you can call on her. Ask her to come and pray with you. Ask her to be there with you in this cloud of witnesses. She really is a person that you can turn to. She wanted to reach out to the poor and the lost and the lonely.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine a better tribute than your book as well. I think you've done such a beautiful job. I wish we had more time. Any final thoughts?
No, I appreciate all that. I mean, I think that she is, you know, I've always felt that she's accompanied me in a certain sense. And what's kind of interesting, because I've written stuff on Edith Stein as well, that when you write about somebody who's a saint, you really can just kind of pray to them to help you with the project. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's sort of a, you know, so it would, you know, I would go to the chapel if something, you know, if I say like a stumbling block or something and just say, okay, I need help with this. And so, you know, the saints are out there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to talk to them.
Well, I would imagine you had some fine conversations with her.
They were interesting.
I bet.
Thank you.
And again, Terrence Wright, we thank you so very, very much.
Thank you.
With Terrence Wright, we've gone inside the pages of Dorothy Day, An Introduction to Her Life and Thought. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to Ignatius.com, the website for its publisher, Ignatius Press, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this conversation, along with hundreds of other spiritual formation programs, visit DiscerningHearts.com. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission. And if you feel us worthy, consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we ask that you tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time for Inside the Pages, Insights from Today's Most Compelling Authors.